Welcome to the Work Revolution podcast, where we believe, in fact, we know, there's a better way to work and live. And we are here to challenge the status quo of obsolete workplace practices and ideas about leadership. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Deborah. Along with you, our listeners, we're evolving our thinking about what it means to belong, innovate, and create change at work. Join us as we dispel the myths of meritocracy, hierarchy, and other bullshit practices that get in the way of all of us harnessing our full potential to make a better world. Hello, and welcome back to our listeners. It's Deborah here today with our special guest, actually a returning guest, which is fun to have someone come back to the Work Revolution podcast. Dr. Carlos Davidovich is back here today. And so I'll just give a little high-level introduction for Carlos. He's a neuromanagement expert, which essentially means someone who is applying what we know about neuroscience or the science of the brain, how the brain works, in organizations in order to optimize performance and engagement. He's also an executive coach and most recently an author. Welcome, Carlos.
Oh, thanks a lot, Debra. Yeah, I'm so happy to be here again.
It's great to see you. We haven't seen each other in person in quite some time.
Yeah, pandemic times.
Yeah, but thanks to modern day technology. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I've invited you here today because you have co-authored a book with someone else that you and I both know, Larry Cash. Yes, very well. And Larry has his entire career, for the most part, has been working on an assessment. And you're going to speak more cohesively about this than I am, but we're both familiar with Larry's work. And most recently, he's taken his work and developed an assessment called Personality DNA. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about how does what we know about and what this assessment is telling us about career choices and how our personality, how our natural talents apply to the work that we do and how successful we can be in the paths that we choose. And also, we want to talk a little bit about specifically on leadership, because you also have something that you call levels of leadership. And there's different talents that are important at different levels of leadership. So I wanted to dig into that a little bit as well. So let's just start, just give us a little bit of an overview about this, the personality DNA assessment, and then we'll lead it into the leadership piece.
Excellent. Excellent, Debra. So I'm thrilled, I mean, to be co-author of a book with a person like Larry Cash that we both know. Larry is working on this regarding assessment for 40 years already. So he got, let's say, a huge database about personalities and about profiles of different levels. There are people all over the world. And what he did, he already has one assessment that we know, but what he did was to walk, I will say, to go one step farther. What he found out is that when he was analyzing, statistically analyzing all these data about, let's say, points of personality, behavioral traits, competencies, and talents, and so on and so forth, he arrived to the conclusions that he was able to define 12 plus two, let's say, personality types or styles. That the assumption that we then almost, I mean, we proved, the assumption is, that's why the book is called The Personality DNA, is that we bring these characteristics, let's say, we bring it with us from the beginning, you know? So we have it in our DNA. What I'm trying to say is that we were born with them. So what he was able to say is, this is a very nice pattern of a characteristic of people that now we can name somehow those group of characteristics in and defined in one specific personality style. So that is how he arrived to this. And based on this is how the book, let's say, started working with. So at this moment, then we talk about 12 personalities DNA. There are two more. I will refer to that. I don't know if you want me to refer more or less what are they about or what else would you like to know, Debra?
Well, I don't know if we need to go into all 12 necessarily, but I guess the question that comes to mind for me is, are we really saying there's only 12 types of people in the world?
That is a great question, because that's one of the first thought that all of us we had. The truth is that we are a combination. So what I mean is there are some, they are more dominant, but definitely I will say all of us, we have some percentage of the 12. Mm. So in the end, I will not do the math. Math is not my strength, but it's a combination of 12 parameters.
Right.
So we are talking about many, many options of personality. And not only that, one thing is to say, I have this DNA information. Another thing is to say that I'm expressing those characteristics, not necessary. So, I mean, I not necessarily will express all my DNA information. And that also applies to my personality style. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is there is a combination of all of them. There's not only 12, like, you know, like a static things like a box. No, it's not like that.
Yeah.
We are a combination of them. And inside the combination, the way we express those characteristics are personal and particular, depends on the person.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to be dominant in one personality style, but then the ones that I'm second highest, third highest in, and lowest in, it's that combination of all of those things that give a unique picture of me, so that not everybody who has the same dominant style as me is going to look exactly the same.
Exactly. Correct. It's totally correct. I like to express when I explain this is what the personality style defines are the tools that you brought to this life to work with. Mm-hmm. What can you do with your tools, with those tools? It's up to you.
Right.
Yeah, I have a hammer, you know, or whatever, or a driller. Okay, I can do more or less things. Depends how I use it, how I learn to use it, because that can be developed. So that is also personal. What we can say is those are the tools. You don't have all the tools, you know, that the toolkit. You have certain tools. What you do with them is up to you.
So it sounds as though you've solved the chicken and egg debate, right? Like, you know, because there's been a lot of talk about it. You and I have talked about this over the years. Like, okay, well, are these natural? Like there are certain things that are natural talents, natural gifts that we people have. And in the work that you and I do, we really want to help people find an expression for those natural gifts, while at the same time acknowledging we're not saying that you can't develop other things, that your environment and your effort does not matter, right? So let's talk a wee bit about that, and then we'll get into the leadership piece, because what we don't want people to go away thinking is, okay, you're born with ABC, you're stuck with that for life, and there's limited career choices for you based on that.
That is a good point, because sometimes people try to be too schematic, let's say structured on this. Mm-hmm. So definitely we are able to express talents, different talents. Maybe one of them is dominant to me, but maybe I need to develop other one that is not so dominant, but will be useful for the work I'm doing. Can I do that? Definitely, yes. What is the difference? Maybe we'll require more effort to do it. But if you ask me, that I think you did, what is the best, the most important component on this personality style is effort, is how much you will develop them, how much you will work on them. And I think that all of us, we remember some schoolmate, you know, elementary or secondary school, we used to see them as a genius, you know, because they were really talented. And through life, nothing happened for whatever reason. Mainly because I remember one person, remember in medicine, you know, and they say he was really talented, but things were so easy, he never did any effort. So he never excelled in anything. So again, it's important to focus on the effort and on the will. What do you want to do? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At the moment you tell me what you want to do, I can support you and help you. What do you want to do? I tell you, with tools, do you have, let's see how to work with that towards your goal.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. You know that I'm fixed on this and this is what I can do. No, it doesn't work that way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so we can develop, but it's going to be just harder. You know, if I wanted to become an astrophysicist, I have to say that would be a hard, long road for me, given my natural talents and where I'm weaker, right? So it's also thinking about, but you know, if that's something I care deeply about, if I'm really interested and curious about that line of work and the work that's being done related to that, there might be other ways that I can be part of that, and with my own expression, my own skills that I can bring to it, right?
Exactly. you will be in astrophysics with your own characteristics.
Right.
And maybe you will not feel the stereotype of an astrophysics.
Right.
You will do it differently.
Yes, I would do it very differently.
But that also means to bring different perspective. And that can add value in the end.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about leadership. We talk a lot about leadership here in this podcast. And so for the work that you're doing related to this, to the assessment and to leadership, you've divided leadership sort of into three chunks or three categories. So let's just talk a little bit about what those levels of leadership are. And then how do these talents or competencies relate to if somebody's looking at advancing through different levels of leadership, for example, they're looking at where they want to go in their career and wanting to move up the ladder, so to speak.
Okay. One thing I want to clarify to add to the previous comment, definitely the book, if you have X or certain personality style, they are, I will say in this way, they are more convenient professions that you will excel at. Yeah, that is true. So you will have more, let's say, possibility of success because there are certain professions or positions that match better with your style. This is also a fact. Yeah?
Yes, I get that.
But it doesn't mean that there are something that is zero that you cannot. That's the only thing I was trying to highlight. But definitely, we help with the previous assessment and this one in particular, people to really identify what are they good at. They can be successful at. Mm-hmm. So because that make it easier and that they can go even farther and do better, right? That's one thing. Let's go back to the level of leadership. What we define are three levels. Let's call the first level is the managerial level. Let's talk about the second level as the senior level, the executive level, VPs and so on and so forth, VP, AVP. And the third is the C-level, the CEO and the level that reports to the CEO. What we did, Larry mainly did, was to identify the talents that each level should have to be successful. Mm-hmm. I will not name the talents now because it could be confusing, but what I will do is just to define in general what are the aptitudes, that they should have, the talents in this case that we call it, mm-hmm. that they should have at each level. One thing to start with, the three levels, so managerial, executive, and C-level, there are two talents that they should have anyway, so that they are common to the three of them.
Okay.
One is the capacity or the ability to thrive in chaos. And of course, now it's more understandable in pandemic times, but it was always like this. Mm-hmm. To be able to organize this chaotic situation of the market, of the company, and that's changing all the time, priorities are changing all the time, and the capacity or ability to serve in that environment is something that the three level should have.
So like a low level of structure is how I think about that one. Like you don't need a lot of structure and things laid out for you. You can walk in. And because I think of the confusing thing about the word chaos when sometimes as people think, well, I don't like chaos. You don't have to like chaos because chaos is a big word.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
Maybe we can say it's not that everyone should be low in structure. That's not correct. Because people that are high in structure will be able to organize the chaotic situation better. Mm-hmm. So what I mean is maybe you're right. Maybe chaos is a quite strong word, but we can say to deal with unexpected and uncertain situations.
And ambiguity, I think.
And ambiguity. This is the VUCA word, right? Volatility, mm-hmm. right? Uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity.
Yeah. Okay,
this
great.
This is the word. So then what happened with the lowest level, the managerial one? At that level, it's important how you, at the three levels, it's important how you connect with your team. That's true. But I will say in the lowest level, the managerial one, is even more important. So the way you can build consensus, the way you can communicate when you are at the level that is more a technical level, normally the managerial level is more technical level, so specialize in something, it's important how you communicate and how are you able to keep accountable the team and yourself.
So accountability
will be, let's say, the parameter or the talent that they need to have, how to keep people accountable, how to communicate with clarity, and the possibility to build consensus. If we move to the next level, the senior level, don't get me wrong.
So yes. one question, Carlos, on that. I want to make sure we said both of them, because now I'm trying to remember what the second one was for the second, for the first level. It was Thrives in Chaos. And what was the other one?
The other one, sorry, I didn't mention, you're right, is Leads Decisively.
Leads Decisively, so this, okay.
Yeah, that will define it like the capacity to lead, I mean, with determination and to define very clearly the objective and to be with the team, I mean, to lead that team or to go along with that team to get things done, yeah? So that's the, what we call Leads Decisively. So Leads Decisively and Thriving Chaos are the common talents for the three levels. On the other side, I already explained the first level, let's say talent. And in the second level, again, don't get me wrong. I mean, what I just said are important in the second and third level. But what become more important or determined at the second level is results. Yeah. How can you inspire others? It's not only building consensus, it's inspiring others. The relationship is not that close at senior level, you know. So you really need to be a role model at this level, yeah? And how much, I will say, you can demonstrate energy. I mean, you can motivate those people to be engaged, yeah? Those will be the differential talent for the second level.
Okay.
Are we okay, Deborah? So yep. Make sense so far?
Yep.
If we move to the third level, it's kind of a common sense because now we are talking about sea level. And in sea level, now, there is another thing that will come into play, that is the political influence. So those are the people connected with the board, connected with stakeholders. I mean, they need to deal with other components that implies an ability regarding political influence.
Mm-hmm.
Another component, of course, at this level that we say is determined or is something, I mean, to be highlight is profitability. So they should see the big picture. They should be able to take results at the highest level. But there is another component nice to comment. That is, how much are they able to initiate without receiving the information? Initiate independently is another talent important here. So what I mean is, first level, most of the time, they receive the instructions what to do. The executive level as well, but the first level, the C level, they are the one creating the track, creating the way to get to results. Yeah? Innovation should be something also involved here and something that, let's say, what new can be brought to the picture and how, in the end, we will get to results and sustain that profitability that the company needs. Makes sense?
Yeah, that's excellent. And the other thing I think about when we talk about that political savviness, political astuteness, it's really a sort of an awareness of other people's agendas and an ability to maneuver. Because a lot of people do get this is, and I'm sure you've seen this too in your coaching work. Sometimes people get stuck in that political maneuvering. Either they feel like, oh, I don't want to play political games. They shy away from it. They have a certain belief system about it. Where as we go into more senior levels of leadership and astuteness and an ability to really be able to see other people's agendas and push an agenda becomes more and more important. Is that a fair way of also saying?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So what we're really talking about here too is the likelihood of success, right? Because what this assessment allows us to do is say, because no one assessment can tell someone what to do with their lives, and nor would we ever say something like that. But it's information. It's getting to know yourself a little bit better. And I think that's really the power that assessments can potentially have.
Absolutely.
And then what we're saying is, okay, but so this can give us an idea of your likelihood of success at different levels of leadership, but also within different professions.
Yeah.
So a low likelihood of success doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that the way you go about doing it, first of all, might be different than what is typically seen.
Exactly.
Right? And this is where we talk about Eddie the Eagle example, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you want to share.
Yeah. So this is, Carlos was, Canadians will be more familiar with this, but you're not originally from Canada. So Eddie the Eagle, it was a perfect example when Carlos and I were first talking about some of these concepts where I said, oh, it's like Eddie the Eagle. So his name is Michael David Edwards, and there's a movie called Eddie the Eagle. And so he was a British ski jumper who went to the 1988 Calgary Olympics here in Canada. And despite many, 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 many obstacles, and also a lack of natural talent, but so much tenacity, so much determination. And from the time he was a boy, just had a dream of going to the Olympics. I don't even think really it mattered what sport. He didn't really care. It was just, what's my path to the Olympics? I just want to go to the Olympics. And he managed to do that. And he wasn't the most talented. But just that idea that there are other things that contribute to our success in addition to this, those natural talents.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, great. So in terms of the levels of leadership, there's different talents at different levels. And so what else do you want people to know about, you know, if they're thinking about their career and they're thinking about their desire for leadership or where they want to go in their career, what advice do you have for people based on this work?
So you just said it about the self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Know yourself is an all quote, of course, a thousand of years. And has a reason to be so important. And this is not a philosophical thing. This is a practical thing. Mm-hmm. You need to know what you're able to do. And mainly, you need to know your talent. Because there is a generalized, I would say, bias. And we mainly focus on our what we call weakness. And that is a mistake. To move forward in our life, we can do it only pulling from talents, not from weakness. This is not about fixing things. It's about pulling from what I really have. Once I'm pulling from my strengths or my talents, then the rest will start accommodating, not by itself, but I will start working on that. What I'm trying to say is I need to have this self-confidence that I can do it. And that self-confidence comes to know my strength, my talents, what I really can do. And those are the things that will really push me forward and make me do things better and reach success. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have one last thing I want to cover, because I think I have seen this also play out, and I'm sure you have too, but is it possible to have the talents for C-suite leadership, but not necessarily as many of the talents for the first level of leadership? And what happens when someone's maybe younger, starting out in their career, and we have this system of sort of, we have to climb the steps, right? We have to like do that lower level of leadership in order to maybe get to the C-suite. What happens in that case if I'm actually better suited according to my natural talents for that C-suite level, but I'm not so good maybe at that first level of leadership?
That can happen, but I would say that the situation is, I would say the opposite one. People, of course, they're capable of talented for lower level and not for the C-suite. And this is something that it's what it is. That means I cannot reach the C-suite. Maybe I can, but then I would need to pull from different factors. The situation that you say, I mean, in one way or other or another, I need to walk the path. So I don't know if somebody can just go to the C-suite just right away, you know? I mean, I don't know, maybe, but that's not the usual thing, yeah? So, but definitely what you're saying is also correct. All right. People can excel in those talents that are compatible with the C-suite. And maybe when they need to deal day by day, the day by day situation with the team, they're not so good at. So they are better, let's say, to see the big pictures and to think different perspectives and to know how to get the results better. That can happen. The two situations can happen. You know, I mean, what we were discussing before, the scenario when somebody has a talent to go to the C-suite and there are extra parameters that can be roadblocks in their life. Then that we are talking about bias mainly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Could be racial, and all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then that requires a different conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. So I think when I think about organizations, I think there's two things that I would bring into this, because I do think that does become problematic for some people in their careers. One thing is, I think the more that organizations know what to look for in terms of talents, they can identify people who are maybe struggling in some areas at that first level, but do have some talents to move forward into other levels of leadership. So that's one thing. But the other thing I would say is, you know, there might be, then I would be really working with someone on, well, what type of organization is best for you? Maybe, like, for example, the thing that's coming to mind is maybe a smaller organization with fewer layers of leadership, where, or a more entrepreneurial type of environment where you can do exercise some more of those talents that are required at that more senior level, and maybe fewer at this other level. So we would really be looking at, okay, so if that's what, how you're going to be most successful and that expression of your talents, we're really looking at, well, what are environments there? What are the types of organizations where you're most likely to thrive?
So what is exactly the question? Well, that was a comment.
That was a comment. That was me telling everybody what I think.
love it.
That was me espousing some deep insights and knowledge.
No. Great. Love it.
Yeah. So yeah, because I have seen that come up. Sometimes it does get in the way. And sometimes those people can be almost labeled the problem child in the organization because they naturally want to do certain things and have, and are expressing themselves in a way that isn't as appropriate at the lower level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if the organization and leadership doesn't know what to look for, we can mislabel people sometimes, I think.
Totally. That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. Okay. So listen, well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for joining us again today. No. This is, I'm sure we'll have more conversations down the road. But in the meantime, just tell our listeners a little bit about if they're interested in this assessment, if they want to take the assessment, if they want to get a copy of the book, where can they do those things?
I will say there are two ways. One way is to buy the book.
Yeah.
The usual, let's say, places that people buy books, you can find it, Amazon and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. Because the book has a QR code where you can do the assessment. This is one way. So the book itself has the QR code that uses, that will take you to the questionnaire, and then you will receive the report. Another way is to get into leadersed.com website.
Okay.
Leadersed.com, the website. In that website, you also will be able to do the assessment, and you don't need to buy the book. And you will receive also, you will see your report, and then you decide if you want to get for more information, it's in the book, or you can contact people that are in charge of LeadersEd, and they will guide you what to do.
Okay, great. Sounds fantastic. Thank you so much, Carlos. It's been a real pleasure talking to you again.
Pleasure to me. Looking forward for the next. Bye-bye.
Bye for now. Back with Lisa. Hello, Lisa.
Hey there, Deborah.
So reflecting back on the conversation I had with Carlos, I'm really interested to hear your perspective, given that you've done a lot of leadership development work over the years. So, you know, thinking about different levels of leadership and competencies and how organizations are approaching this, but also just people when they're thinking about their individual careers and progression, what was it that stood out to you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having this conversation with Carlos and having him back a second time, because he does bring some perspectives to the conversation around leadership, around assessing people's competencies and skills in terms of levels of leadership. And a couple of things struck me, I guess that I, a bit less than what Carlos said, but more things that got triggered for me having worked in this field for a while. And what I thought was really interesting, and you actually pointed this out about the three levels, right? The sort of managerial entry level manager, the middle section, the kind of director level, and then the C-suite, sort of at these different types of skills or competencies that you need as you evolve in your role in an organization. So anything from at the lower, like I say lower end, I just mean from the hierarchical perspective, building consensus all the way up to having political savvy. And what I thought about this, I was thinking about a book that I read years ago that really helped me shape my thinking around, it's one thing to develop competencies and to have talents that you then further develop. To me, that's in the language of this book that I had read called Mastering Leadership. This is sort of kind of the outer game, right? These are the things you need to be able to do. And where I think that this work around leadership development can be enhanced is what's the inner game, right? What's your level of consciousness? Because typically leaders, as we learn to become a leader, we start out having to learn to do things, how to have a performance conversation, how to guide your staff or help shape the culture on your team, how to manage conflict, how to manage your own time, going from an individual contributor to now being responsible for a team of people, how to make sure you're getting your sort of satisfaction from your work from the collective of the team and not from your own contribution. So there's kind of, you know, a transition that leaders go through. But there's also something that happens internally, which is starting to understand that leadership isn't so much what you do, but who you are, your stance, how you show up, right? And this to me, I think, is sort of a parallel layer or a parallel path to the things that you and Carlos talked about. Because I guess I can only relate this to my own experience. When I think of my very first job as a manager, I was 24 years old. I was managing a bookstore and I had zero clue about things like reaching consensus or any of this, role modeling behaviors, demonstrating enthusiasm, having a vision. And so I think a model like this is useful around the three levels. But as I've matured over decades, I've come to understand, and I see this also with my coaching clients, that doing only gets you so far. Really, where we have to help our leaders get to is in being. So when you talk of empathy, when you talk of leading with values, when you talk about authenticity, and I know these words are bandied around a lot with leadership, but they come from who you are and less from a thing you need to do. Yes, that was one of my thoughts. What about you? Like, as you've reflected on this conversation?
Well, you bring up a really interesting point. And what's going on in my brain right now, which is actually in a bit of turmoil at the moment, I'm not sure what I think yet or how I want to respond, but I'm going to try to formulate it as best I can. This idea of the inner versus the outer, and I don't know that they're that separate. I sort of see them as being meshed together, but any development work, unless you're learning, here's how to use an Excel spreadsheet, or here's how to do some technical thing that people need to learn how to do as part of their job. But really, most development is internal in my mind. And so that brings up a really interesting point when we think about competencies, because the competencies that we're talking about in an assessment like this, they are, you know, to Carlos's point, according to this research, you know, these are things that people are born with. Now, whether they are developed in a way where they can be effectively utilized and not overdone, misused, because that can happen, that they can be used as a strength. I always give this example when I'm talking to clients. When we talk about strengths and talents, and we talk about them, they can be really helpful and they can move you forward, or they can become problematic. So I often tell this story of me in grade 3.
Okay.
So here's me, super cute in grade 3. And I kept getting moved around the classroom. So a number of times during that school year, my desk kept getting moved. And then eventually I found myself like, my desk was attached to the teacher's desk and there was nobody around me, no other students around me. And what I determined eventually over time from this experience was that, because I got to know myself a little better, is that I was super chatty and super friendly. And it didn't matter where I went in the classroom. You could put me beside the quietest kid in the class. I would get them talking, right? Like I would make friends no matter where I went. And so what is arguably, you could say, a great natural strength of mine I actually felt pretty bad about it in that circumstance. It was really a big problem for me. It was getting me into trouble. And so being in the right environment where we can use our strengths and that they are valued in that situation, I think that's one important consideration. And that we know, because I've had to fine tune this thing that comes natural to me, I have to know when and where and when to hold back. And we have to, it's part of that maturing. And so that self-awareness component that you're talking about, I think that self-awareness and that inside work is really a lot of fine-tuning of what we bring to the table and enhancing it and knowing when and where and how to use some of these strengths that perhaps come natural. And I think That's a really interesting point. I think that leadership development, as in life, as in just progressing through life and maturing and evolving as a human being, is a lot of internal work. And one thing I think that's really important about assessments like this is that it is information, it is data, it's additional data on who we are as individuals. And I don't often use assessments and people are really completely blown away and surprised by the results necessarily. But it gives us different language, a different way of looking at competencies. Like I sort of wanted to put some description around some of the words, for example, that Carlos used, because we're talking about a definition of something in a particular assessment. So for example, thrives in chaos. If I just use those words, it could mean something totally different to you, to me, than what the definition of this is when we look at it in the context of how is this a competency that can show up for somebody. But you're right, we are evolving through levels of leadership in addition to, or maybe alongside, I'm not really sure, to having different competencies. But I think what's important is that some competencies are going to come more natural to some people than others. So if I've got competencies around that more managerial or supervisory level of leadership, let's say, for example, collaboration and building consensus, I don't need to do as much of that typically, right? Because we're talking about typically, and we're talking also about mathematical probabilities. We're comparing against people who are successful, have a successful track record in the current system as it exists today, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And so when we compare against those successful people, we've got a profile of what success looks like. What are the competencies? And so what is the probability that then you would be successful and satisfied in one of those roles? But we also know that rules are broken all the time.
Yeah. Well, you said so many things there that are, I'm just crackling with desires to respond to them. But I'm just going to say a couple of things to start off. So absolutely, totally, and completely agree that when we look at what success means, we're talking about systems of hierarchy and bureaucracy, and some people thrive in those and can be really successful. And if we want to perpetuate those systems, we're going to look at success as being the things that people do to be successful in those places. If we want to change organizational culture, if we want to broaden what success means, then we have to start looking at what that means, what success means, and then what types of skills, competencies, et cetera, will get us there. One thing I was thinking when I was listening to you is I've always had some level of confusion of what's a competency, what's a capability, what's a strength, what's a talent. And I've decided to just back off of all of that and remember something that some wise person said to me years ago, is that we come into this world with talents to express and lessons to learn. And that to me makes it really simple, because if I think of that, there's things innate in me that I can express and bring to the world, and these are my strengths or whatever we want to call them, I need to learn to, as you say, use them, understand them, and use them appropriately, right? Because otherwise, perfect example you gave of overdone strengths, right? But I also have things that I need to learn in this world. Like, and that comes, I think, where you touched on the difference between being naturally voluble and wanting to connect and friendly, the outer you, and then the inner you of the self-awareness, right? So learning to modulate and to choose when to do that. And to me, that's really a key thing, that as we evolve in our lives and as leaders, that self-awareness becomes a really critical thing. I've noticed in myself, and I've seen this in other people, where sometimes we have to borrow strengths. They're not natural to us, but the context and the environment is asking us to be something that is not innate in us. For some people, that's a really fun challenge, growing and developing to fit the context, to meet the context. For others, it is extremely painful, asking us to be more outgoing in an environment in which we just naturally have more introverted tendencies, or to take on aspects of a role that require us to step out of our comfort zone all the time. Instead of feeling like we're growing and learning, we can feel really stressed. Right. So I think there's another piece around that when we talk about competency, skills, talents. The one thing I wanted to talk about just generally about assessments and then step into this is that I've always naturally been a cynic when it comes to assessments. And the reason for that is that they tend to be quite reductionist, right? Whether it's Myers-Briggs or DISC or the Strength Deployment Inventory or you name it, this assessment, they kind of tell you there are three types or four types or 12 types, or, and I don't think human complexity can be reduced to that. However, I agree with you where they can point out things where you said people often when they see results from this assessment or others, things that you kind of knew but couldn't put language to, or things that you didn't quite know, but now suddenly the way people behave towards you makes sense because you've been coming across in a way that you thought was, I'm being really friendly. Well, maybe you're coming across like a puppy dog who just wants to like jump and lick and, you know, do it, right? Which is, nobody wants that, right? Coming at you like
nobody?
A wave. So I've learned that, I mean, even from a Cosmo quiz, I have learned things about myself. So doing assessments, self-assessments, 360s, 180s, they are valuable tools. And at the same time, they are a picture or a snapshot in time of you at a particular point in your life based on a particular science or research of what that particular instrument is doing. What I do love about assessments, and this one I think also has a lot of valuable information in it, is that it gives you an opportunity to depersonalize a development process where you're not coming at it feeling, oh, I'm bad or I'm wrong or I do this and I do that and I can't change myself. It's who I am. It actually can give you data to kind of look at the behaviors that you're choosing and many behaviors we all choose without realizing we're choosing, and to kind of take a step away and go, if I'm not getting the relationship strength that I want, if I'm not getting the results I want in the way I'm trying to work with others or collaborate, I might be learning something from assessment data that can actually help me function just generally better in the world, but also in my work relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've debriefed a version of this assessment with many, many, many people over the years, mostly in the context of career, but it's, you know, it's applicable in different settings and, or for different reasons, let's say. And there's no such thing as a bad profile. It's all in terms of the context and the environment, because as I'm debriefing this with someone, there's a lot that can be learned about, let's say, behaviors that come more natural to someone. And that's what it really is. We're not scoring people on you're good at this and bad at this thing. It's really the behaviors that come more natural that you more naturally lean on, and likewise others that you don't lean on more, or that come a lot less natural. And so if, let's say, I'm someone who has sort of an engineering type mind and I have a lot of competencies that come natural related to that, or a lot of talents related to that. And for example, being able to work with a lot of data, numbers, data, having numeracy skills and analytical skills as it relates to that. Well, in the wrong setting, in the wrong type of work where I don't get to use that, and perhaps my success is really reliant on other competencies that I have to exercise, that might get really uncomfortable. Now, yes, maybe I can learn some of those things, but if I'm constantly having to, it's like if you're right-handed and you break your right arm and you have to write with your left hand. So it's not to say that I can't learn to get by with my left hand, but man, is it going to feel awkward and uncomfortable? Now, maybe eventually over enough time and with enough practice, it would maybe eventually feel pretty natural, but I would argue it's almost, it might never feel as natural as just what I would do with my right hand. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot to consider with assessments. And I think the point that's really important to make too, I think when we look at this more from an organizational point of view, is if we can better understand what people's natural talents are, then it's possible to start to hire, promote, and map people through organizations based not just on a solid track record of having done the exact same work. You and I have talked about this before, where organizations do what I think you and I both agree is a mistake, especially in an environment where we're trying to attract and retain talent. Employers have a tendency to go to market looking for the exact thing. It's like they have an empty hole in the puzzle and they want to find the piece out there that is an exact fit that they could just slot into that hole in the puzzle. That's like, you know, I have to don't do anything. I just have this person that comes prepackaged, perfect fit. Well, why would anybody want to do the exact same job, do the exact same things that they've already done, that they already know how to do? And so being able to look more at potential and hire for potential, and also look for, okay, so then what do we need to do to develop people, I think is really important. And going beyond potential a little bit, that's really important. But also, where are people deeply curious and where are they deeply motivated? Because it's going to be a lot easier for me to learn the things that I need to learn if I'm motivated to learn them. And the more intrinsic that motivation is for me, it's not going to, again, it's going to feel a lot less like work. I'm going to put in a lot more discretionary effort. But if I have to learn, you know, for me, again, I'll go back to my circumstances. If I have to learn how to do formulas in a spreadsheet, that's going to be something that I'm going to tend to procrastinate on an awful lot, because it's just not something I'm even that curious about. So I think a combination of natural talents and also curiosity and motivation is what's really going to drive people towards success. And you could argue that curiosity, willingness to learn, and motivation is just, if not more important, almost in some cases, than the natural talent.
Ideally, you want a mix of the two plus. I mean, there's a quote that I remember from years ago, is where your skills and talents meet the needs of the world, therein lies your calling, right? And this touches back on leadership, in that the thing that we most need from leaders is to help employees create an environment, where employees can bring these strengths and talent. I'm thinking of a client that I worked with, in which the leadership was like, we want innovation, we want your best ideas and bring your creativity. But boy, if somebody made a mistake or suggested something that was outside the sphere of this leadership team, or what this culture said was acceptable, like, you were basically treated either as a pariah or a troublemaker. And so this is the really, to me, a core thing of leadership. And when Carlos talked about the political lens and the cultural lens inside organizations, like, I would hope that people at all levels of leadership start learning really quickly and not wait till you become high in the organization about, okay, now I'm a creator of culture, that every single leader finds ways, learns, addresses what's in them, right? That being afraid of somebody being smarter than them on their team, or like, create the conditions for people to bring all the great things that, you know, again, we even, I've talked about this, that this world needs from us, needs from all of us. There's so much untapped potential and talent and motivation and creativity in the brains and hearts and bodies of people that we so want to invite into the workplace. And our traditional models of leadership, organizations and systems that have entrenched sexism, racism, prejudices based on how people look, where they're from, their gender identities. Thankfully, this stuff is changing, in my view, not fast enough, but that we do want to help leaders create the conditions so that their egos are not getting in the way of the talent that they often have at their disposal. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And that's what I meant by the systems that we currently have. And we're evaluating people who have been successful in those systems. And ideally, we're looking to have those systems change. You've also reminded me of a quote from Yvonne Thompson. She's with an organization called Change Innovators, and she has a book, Creating the Accountability Culture. I'll put a link in the show notes. I don't know if I'm getting the whole title. She has a quote, and it goes something like, you know, leadership has nothing to do with you, the leader, and everything to do with you at the same time. And it's interesting. It's a thought-provoking sort of quote. And I think it speaks a little bit to what you're saying, that it is an inside job. It's your own internal work that you do to evolve as a person. And that's people who have done that work. They might not have all of the competencies that we're checking at, you know, a certain level, like checking the boxes, but there are lots of atypically successful people out there, you know. And that's why I bring up that story of Eddie the Eagle, which is just based on, again, that's why I talk about curiosity and determination and motivation, that there is more to success than that. But at the same time, an easy example would be, okay, an NBA player, right? I mean, you know, my son, who's 15 years old now, given the genes that he's inherited, him making it to the MBA is going to be a lot more challenging than it would be for, you know, someone else, just purely based on height and raw athletic ability alone. And so there are certain things we just have to work with what we have in some circumstances. And I think this really relates to what we call growth mindset, in the sense that comparing against other people, like my son, he loves basketball. He's going to be a really unhappy, bitter individual if he's comparing himself against the best in the NBA. But if he's comparing himself against himself and his own progress, the growth that he's making and the progress that he's making and what he's learning, and that's the measure, and the goals are set from that perspective of, again, that inside job of I'm getting better, I'm developing, I'm learning, I'm growing, then that's the real measure of success and satisfaction. Because it's just a recipe to make yourself miserable if you're always doing outside comparisons. Interesting topic. Yeah, we could talk a lot about it.
It's a great topic. I'll just finish by saying, you know, something I learned a few years ago that made a world of difference to how I thought about career trajectories is that we spend a chunk of our lives, and you know, we start as novices in many ways in our lives, right? Why we grow, we learn, we mature, whether it's through school, family, community, et cetera. But professionally, you know, we start really not knowing a whole heck of a lot of something. We have some innate skills and talents, and we work towards something, whatever profession, and eventually we become an expert at that thing, some level of expertise. Then, you know, we go on, and then we're working towards achievement, right? We're using our expertise to achieve something. And this to me is really about the ego. It's about us. To me, the evolutionary leap that we should all aspire to for ourselves, for our own growth as leaders, is to go from that 99 degrees to the 100 where water's boiling, and that takes a lot of energy, is to go to from an ego consciousness about me to an eco, like about others. How do I create, whether it's, again, my professional life, my personal life, environments and systems in which humans are valued? How do I catalyze the potential in others? How do I help other people have conversations that are difficult for them to have? How do we create some sort of way of being together in the world, sharing problems? And I'm not saying achievement is wrong. I'm not saying success on your own. I'm not saying any of that. But to me, there needs to be a sense of balance in working for the things that matter to us individually as people and what we achieve and our goals, and helping create a world in which other people can achieve the things that are important to them.
Yeah. And ironically, it actually takes a level of detachment to do that, which is kind of maybe sounds somewhat counterintuitive. It's detachment in the sense of I don't have direct control, right? So I don't have control over other people. You know, you talked about this before, about moving from control over, right, to power over versus power with. Similar concept. And so if I'm overly attached and trying to control outcomes and the behaviors of other people, I'm going to learn pretty quickly I don't have as much control as I think I do, right? But what I control is me, my own, how I show up and how I respond and react to others, so that it helps create that environment that you keep talking about. Really interesting stuff. Okay. Well, this is something you and I are going to continue having lots of great conversations on, things related to this. So what do we want to say to our listeners before we wrap for today?
Well, you can always find us, reach out to us, contact us through our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com. Deborah and I are also active on LinkedIn. You can find us there, Deborah Ady, and that's not me. I'm Lisa Schmidt. So please connect with us. And we're going to be recording some more Ask Us Anything. So we'd love to hear you share with us. What are some of the things, especially now in the world of work, where people are talking hybrid, we're talking leaving jobs, we're talking all kinds of things. The world of work is changing, and we'd like you to be a part of this revolution. So share your challenges, and I'll do our best to keep things moving progressively in the world of work.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and give us a review. And follow the Work Revolution podcast on Instagram for more great content and updates about our work.
In addition to two full episodes a month, we have a monthly Ask Us Anything, where we answer your questions about leadership, career maneuvering, and whatever workplace challenges you're facing. Submit your questions to our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes as well as learn more about who we are.
Thanks to Bernie at Blue Eye Music for our music theme, and to the team at Podatize for production support. Until next time.